Mr. Crawley, good morning.
Morning, Mr. Robot.
You and your family are in good health, are you?
Quite well, through God's mercy.
I had not expected to see you in Lady Lufton's gig.
She sent it round. Asked me to visit her.
Did she indeed?
It's an important matter, I hope. But I've much to be doing in my parish. Good day, Mr. Robart.
Hogglestock is the name of Crawley's parish. A poor parish, not part of Lady Lufton's property. And Crawley and his family are pitiably poor themselves. Nor is it easy to extend them any kindness, for Crawley is a stern, proud man. A man who seeks help from God alone, who has no ambition. A man, you might say, as unlike myself as could be found. I should not much care to be Mr. Crawley of Hogglestock, but I do not much care at present to be Mark Robarts of Framley, for I have acted very foolishly, very wrongly, and I have brought upon myself the threat of utter ruin.
Framley Parsonage by Anthony Trollope. Dramatised for radio in 3 episodes by Martin Wade. Starring David Haig as Mark Robarts, Anna Massey as Lady Lufton, Olivia Williams as Fanny, Abigail Doherty as Lucy, and Kenneth Cranham as Josiah Crawley. With John Wood, Amanda Root, Selena Cadell, Gabrielle Lloyd, John Carlyle, and Christopher Scott. Episode 2.
Mr. Crawley, I requested your presence here so that I might ask for your help with regard to my own vicar here at Framley, Mr. Mark Robart.
Ah, yes.
He is an excellent parish clergyman.
You think so?
Oh, yes, Mr. Crawley, I do. He is excellent. However...
Indeed, indeed. However...
He got this living at such a young age, Mr. Crawley, that he is not perhaps quite as steady as I could wish him to be. The fault, no doubt, was as much mine as his in placing him in such a position so early in his life.
Yes, no doubt.
But that's past remedy now. Mr. Robarts will in time become a credit to his profession. Of that I'm sure. But at present...
He finds it hard not to succumb to temptation.
In some measure, yes.
Spends much of his time away from family, I'm told, at places such as Chaldicotts.
Ah, but...
And Gatherham Castle, the Duke of Omnium's place.
Yes, indeed. Let us not, however, paint too black a picture of Mr. Robarts. It was only a few occasions that he went away, you know. And that business is all behind us now. He understands my views on it.
Perhaps. But there's the hunting also.
Ah, well, it is the hunting which I wanted to discuss with you.
He's off with the hounds 2 or 3 times a week, I understand.
Oh, no, Mr. Crawley. Very seldom above once, I'm sure. And even then it's chiefly with a view to being with my son, who is a particular friend of his.
I don't see how that makes it any better, Lady Lufton.
Do you not?
In truth, no. Hunting is a vicious pastime. Whatever one's reasons for indulging in it, it is vicious and cruel and promotes profligacy and turpitude.
Well, I don't know about that. But it is at any rate unbecoming in a clergyman. I would tell him so myself, but I rather fear he might feel aggrieved, as might my son, if I were to interfere personally in this regard. So... I wonder if I might ask you to see Mr. Robarts and try to encourage him to discontinue the pastime.
The bill which Mr. Sowerby sent me this morning lies here on my desk, as yet unsigned. I must sign this bill, says Sowerby, and without delay, for the first bill has fallen due, and since neither he nor I can find the necessary £400, he must draw on my name for a further £500. I should never have got into this mess. Should never have taken such a risk to oblige a man like Sowerby. Yes?
Mr. Robarts.
Crawley?
I've come here on unpleasant business.
Unpleasant business?
Yes, Mr. Robarts, but I am not one to flinch from it.
No, Mr. Crawley, I'm sure. Do take a seat. He cannot mean the bill I've signed, surely. The Vicar of Hogglestock cannot possibly have learned anything about that.
Well, Mr. Robarts, I shall go to the root of the matter. There is nothing like going to the root of the matter, in my view.
No, indeed.
People are saying that your present mode of life is one that does not befit a soldier in Christ's army.
People? Which people?
Those around you. The people of your neighborhood who would look to you as a lamp to guide them, but who find instead that you are wont to consort with jockeys and hunters, that you gallop after the hounds and take your place with the vainest of worldly pleasure seekers.
So it is not the bill. That's some relief. Lady Lufton has put him up to this, encouraged him to preach at me, if he needed encouragement.
Mr. Robarts, if what is said about you is true, then it is very wrong. For you owe it to those around you to live a godly, cleanly life, and you owe it also, in a much higher way, to your Father who is in heaven. I would ask you, therefore, are you doing your best to lead a godly, cleanly life?
Well, Mr. Crawley...
Are you?
There are but few of us, I suppose, who could safely say yes to such a question.
Perhaps... But are there very many, do you think, who would find the question as painful to answer as you do? And even if there were, are you content to be numbered among them? If you are, then I am mistaken in you. Speak, my brother. If it be possible, open your heart.
I have done wrong.
Yes, yes, you have. There has been a terrible falling off, Mr. Robarts. Terrible indeed. But you are not, I know it, a thoughtless sinner, such as many of those parishioners of yours whose sins it is your duty to crush. You have higher aspirations, or you did have, certainly. But you are become a hunting parson, and you ride with a happy mind among blasphemers and mocking devils. Oh, Mr. Robarts, what are you? If you are not an ignorant sinner, must I call you a hypocrite?
No, not a hypocrite. Not a hypocrite.
No, I don't believe you are. You are one who, through carelessness, has stumbled in the dark, and who has bruised and cut his feet. Henceforth, you must be wary. You must walk cautiously among the thorns and rocks. Cautiously, yet boldly. With manly courage, and yet with Christian meekness. As all of us should walk through this vale of tears.
I am back at the parsonage now. I spent Christmas at Framley Court with Lady Lufton, with Lord Lufton, her son, and with Griselda Grantley, the Archdeacon's daughter, who is very beautiful, or considered so. I did not altogether enjoy the time I spent there, for I am not at all used to such society, often felt I would be far happier with a good book, a good chair, and a good fire. But there were some occasions which afforded some pleasure. I mean, in particular, when Lord Lufton contrived to remove himself from Miss Grantley and talk with me. We would talk most pleasantly, he and I, grew increasingly well acquainted. And now, I think, Lord Lufton and I have become, well, good friends.
Fanny, I wish to say a few words about your sister-in-law.
Oh, is there anything wrong?
No, my dear, nothing is wrong. But it's always well to be on one's guard.
On one's guard, Lady Lufton?
You know how fond we are of Lucy. She is a nice, good girl. And we did so much enjoy her being with us at Christmas.
Well, she enjoyed it too. She was greatly distressed, as you know, by her father's death. But she seems so much happier now.
Yes, and I am pleased for her. She is, as I say, a good girl. But Fanny, dearest, the truth is, she and my son are getting into a way of being too much together.
Oh? Of talking to each other too exclusively.
I see.
Oh, please understand, it is not that I suspect any evil in this matter. Suspiciousness is not in my nature.
Indeed not, Lady Lufton.
But you see, Lucy may be under the impression that Lord Lufton means more by way of his attentions to her than he really does.
You don't think Lucy is in love with him, surely?
Oh, no, no, no. No! If I thought that, my dear, I should recommend that your sister-in-law be sent away altogether. Oh, no, no. I simply feel that it would be sensible if a little management were employed. I'm sure that you understand me, Fanny, dear, with your perfect tact and good sense.
I can't believe that there's anything in it, Lady Lufton.
I'm sure there isn't. Lucy is, as I say, a nice girl, a good girl. And it would be sad if anything were to interrupt the cordial relations that exist between Framley Court and Framley Parsonage. So, Fanny, my dear, it might be prudent if you were to have a little word with her.
I know, of course, how keen Lady Lufton is that her son should marry Griselda Grantley. She and Griselda's mother have, I believe, come to a decided agreement that the match will be made. But I confess that when her ladyship spoke about offering Lucy words of caution, I did not really see the need.
Ah, Mrs. Robart, good day to you.
And to you, Lord Lufton.
Lord Lufton wants me to learn to ride.
Oh, indeed.
This horse would carry her beautifully. He really would. His only fault is he's too soft-mouthed.
Soft-mouthed? I suppose that's the same sort of thing as a man being soft-hearted.
Exactly. You must manage both of them with a very light hand. 2 days, that's all it will take. To learn to ride, I mean. Do you think she should try, Mrs. Robarts?
Lucy has no riding habit, I'm afraid.
Oh, we can soon remedy that. There's one in the house, I'm sure. My sister left it on her last visit.
Oh, but Lucy wouldn't dream of taking such a liberty with your sister's possessions.
Oh, indeed, I would not. Nor, secondly, would I dream of taking Lord Lufton's horse. Thirdly, I would be a good deal too frightened to ride it at all. And fourthly, a great many other reasons besides.
But that's nonsense.
Oh, no more so, Lord Lufton, than your talk of soft mouths and light hands. Now, it's getting cold.
Yes, it is.
So Mrs. Robarts and I will wish you, Lord Lufton, goodbye. I wonder what Lady Lufton would have said if I'd agreed to the riding lessons.
I don't think she'd have liked it.
Oh, I'm sure she wouldn't. I sometimes wonder if she likes Lord Lufton talking to me at all.
She certainly doesn't like it, Lucy, when she sees him flirting with you.
Flirting? Has he been flirting?
He has been paying you attentions.
Have I been flirting with him?
I didn't say that.
But Lady Lufton said it, I suppose.
Lucy!
And she asked you to lecture me about it.
Not lecture you. Put you on your guard.
On my guard?
Lucy, my dear, nobody is saying that you have done anything wrong. Quite the opposite. Your refusing Lord Lufton's offer just now is proof enough of that.
I must be on my guard, nonetheless, against falling in love.
Well?
But Fanny, even if I were to fall in love with Lord Lufton, would it really be anything wrong?
My dear Lucy.
I wonder if Griselda Grantley was advised to be on her guard when she was staying at Framley Court. Lord Lufton should have a label put on him, as if he were a bottle. Danger. Poison. Then young innocents such as I might avoid the possibility of a tragic error.
Oh, Lucy. Well, there will be no error in this case. The danger of this particular bottle has now been pointed out to you. Lord Lufton is labelled, and you, therefore...
I am on my guard. Yes. I joked with my sister-in-law, or tried to when she spoke about Lord Lufton. But it is no joking matter, I see that. Lord Lufton has made no absolute show of affection, has said nothing, done nothing in that way. But I'm aware that in our recent conversations, he has become more familiar, more intimate than he was before, more so perhaps than ordinary friendship should permit. What his true feelings are towards me, I cannot tell. I cannot tell what my own feelings are towards him. Whether simply I am flattered by his attentions, or perhaps am touched by something deeper. But I know that there is danger here. And Lady Lufton is right. Fanny is right. To put me on my guard.
I call to say farewell. I'm leaving for town tomorrow.
Oh, indeed.
Heaven knows when we shall see each other again.
Next winter, perhaps?
Yes, for a day or two, I suppose. One can't tell.
No, at least you can't. I shall be here, I've no doubt, for I'm of a migratory tribe myself.
I wish you were, Lucy. You should be. For in other respects, you know, you show a strong sense of adventure, which is why I like you so much. You have spirit.
Lord Lufton.
You've managed to get out of the old-fashioned grooves, and you like to act as your own guide.
Well, if I have left the old grooves, I mean to go back to them, I assure you.
And perhaps, Lucy, you have already begun to try. I feel, you know, that there is some estrangement between us, that in the past few days we have not been such friends as we were. I suppose my mother is the cause of all this.
She has said nothing to me, at least.
Oh, of course, she is as loving a mother as a son could wish for. But so great is her love that she cannot let me choose my friends for myself. Or indeed, choose my... Oh, Lucy, I cannot think that you have ceased to feel some regard for me.
No, Lord Lufton. I still feel some regard for you.
Some warm regard?
Well, yes. And it was very foolish of me to do so.
Foolish?
Yes, Lord Lufton. It was foolish indeed ever to leave that old-fashioned groove of mine, though I admit it was pleasant to appear independent and to indulge in an open friendship with you. No doubt your rank, which is so different from my own, made it seem attractive all the more.
That's nonsense.
Oh, but I'm sure it did. Oh, Lord Lufton, what will the world say of me if I allow this friendship to continue?
The world?
Yes. For I am not such a philosopher that I can disregard the world, though you perhaps can afford to do so. Well, the world, I think, will say this, that I have set my cap at a young lord.
No!
And the young lord, in return, has made an utter fool of me.
No, Lucy! The world shall say no such thing. Oh, Lucy, my own Lucy, my heart's best friend.
Please!
My love, my chosen love. And soon... my wife.
Lord Lufton, this is very wrong.
Wrong? Why? May you not marry me? May you not learn to love me?
I shall not try to learn.
But if you were to try...
No, no.
Can you not love me?
Lord Lufton, you have no right to press me further.
Oh, but I have every right. For I must learn the truth. My happiness depends on it, Lucy. I love you. Love you with all my heart, and I must know how your heart stands towards me.
I cannot love you. I cannot.
Then God help me. For I am the most wretched man on earth. I shall take the first train to town tomorrow.
Oh, is there a need for you to go so early?
Yes, Mother. Yes, there is.
I see. Very well. Oh, Ludovic, I have received a letter from Mrs. Grantley.
Yes?
And she has agreed that Griselda will stay with me when I'm at Bruton Street.
Ah, how nice.
We'll see something of you there, I trust, my dear. It wouldn't do for Griselda to be dull now, would it?
Of course it wouldn't.
No, she's a very beautiful young girl.
She's not exactly plain, it's true.
She is very beautiful, I assure you. And there are many men who find her so, Ludovic. Many men.
No doubt there are. But I still don't think she'll set the Thames on fire.
I should hope not, Ludovic. If Griselda was the sort of girl who sets the Thames on fire, I should not wish to have her in my house. I don't like such girls. Nor, I'm certain, do you.
This is a surprise, Sabi.
Yes. Your dear wife thought so, too. A fine lady, but not, I think, my greatest admirer. You've been telling her dreadful things about those bills, I suppose.
I've told her nothing about them.
Quite right. No reason to bother her. No reason, indeed, to bother yourself. Oh, thank you, by the way, for signing that second bill. You'll find it will remove all difficulties.
Yes, Sowerby, until 3 months are passed and the bill falls due.
Oh, by that time, dear Mark, I shall have made my grand alliance with the wealthy Miss Dunstable. And you, perhaps, will no longer be merely the vicar of Framley.
I don't understand.
Well, you've heard, no doubt, of the sad death of Dr. Burslem, the Barchester prebendary.
Yes.
He must all die someday. No doubt you have advised your parishioners as much several times over.
Mark, the office is worth £600 a year, and there's a house in Barchester to go with it.
And, of course, very few duties. Someone must succeed poor Dr. Burslem, and it seems to me, Mark, that you might do so as well as any other.
Well, Mr. Robarts, I congratulate you.
Oh, it's a little too early for that. I've not been made prebendary yet, you know. But I am advised...
By Mr. Sowerby, you mean?
Yes, by Mr. Sowerby. I am advised that since Mr. Sowerby's brother-in-law is now in the government...
Ah, yes. Mr. Harold Smith has become Lord Pettibag, I believe.
He has. With Mr. Smith in the government, as I say, I should have some prospect of success.
Well, then, I must congratulate you also in your powerful new patron.
I trust you share my view, Lady Lufton, that the benefice is one which I can hold without any detriment to my work here at Framley.
I hope it is, at least.
But you do not think I should refuse it?
Well, Mr. Robarts, at such short notice, I am hardly prepared to advise you. But you seem anyway to have made up your mind, so I don't suppose I need give the matter much consideration. I wish you joy and good fortune, Mr. Robarts.
My dear wife has no more enthusiasm for Sowerby's plan than Lady Lufton. She has said little about it directly, but that of itself is a sign of her lack of approval. She fears a Greek from Chaldecott's bearing gifts, that's clear. But it would be folly to refuse the offer. Here is something paid back in return for those days spent among the Chaldecott set. Here is the value, surely, of knowing men of influence and power. I am to go up to town tomorrow to see how Sowerby has moved things on.
Oh, men in office never make distinct promises. They won't even admit the likelihood of night following day. But listen, Mark, even if Harold Smith should let us down, the matter has been opened with the Duke of Omnium.
The Duke?
Yes, my dear fellow. He's indicated that he'll happily put in a word on our behalf.
I see.
It's not his way, you know. Not at all. Wouldn't have said he'd do it if he didn't like you. So you see, it was as well you made his acquaintance, was it not? Your visit to Gatherum Castle is already reaping dividends, I think.
I'm very grateful to the Duke. And, of course, to you, sir.
No need. Oh, before I forget, there's another little favour I can confer. That horse of mine you rode last month.
Yes, I'm afraid I'm not interested. I did tell you.
He's yours for £130. Mark, it's dirt cheap for a hundred of that class.
No, Sowerby.
And you wouldn't have to find any cash.
Oh, would I not?
No. We deduct the 130 from the amount that's on those wretched bills you've signed. So, you pay no cash and you get a fine horse. What could be more convenient?
So you return to Framley tomorrow morning?
Yes, Lufton.
I was with Sowerby today. There's a chance of my becoming the prebendary of Barchester.
Yes, I heard. It was about Sowerby that I wished to talk to you, and about a certain money dealer whom Sowerby employs, a fellow by the name of Tozer. You know of him, of course.
Well, Sowerby's spoken of him a few times, but I've never met the fellow.
Well, I have. Yesterday, he forced his way into my rooms when I was dressing for dinner. Told me that if I didn't find £800, and quickly, he'd start proceedings.
But surely, Lufton, all that business of yours with Sowerby is settled.
I thought it was. Settled at great cost. Sooner than have a fuss, I paid through the nose. Or at least Mother did. But now, it seems, having succeeded with me once, Sowerby's greedy enough to try his luck again. He's claiming that I have failed to honour a bill, when in fact it was honoured long ago. I tell you, Robarts, he won't succeed. If he goes on this way, I'll expose the whole affair, my entire financial involvement with Sowerby, and it can go before a jury. I won't allow Sowerby to squeeze me like an orange. And you can advise him as much when you next see him.
Lufton, I hope you don't think that I am a party to what has been going on.
Well, my recent dealings with the man have been through you, have they not?
Yes, but my intention was to oblige you both. This is unreasonable, you know. This is unjust. I acted as ambassador between the two of you, at your own particular request. And in return, I am accused of assisting in a swindle.
I bring no accusation against you, Robart. But I know that you have your own undertaking with Saadi. You told me so yourself.
Yes, to accommodate him, I did put my name to a bill.
Only to one?
Well, no.
Two bills you have signed, totaling £900, I believe. All of which, Robart, you will have to make good.
Perhaps.
And the world will tell you, of course, that this £900 is the fee that you have had to pay.
Fee?
Yes, Robarts. To enable you to become prebendary of Barchester.
Ah, Mr. Prebendary. I thought you'd left for home.
That was my intention, but I wanted to speak to you again. You see, I have decided that I shall not be Mr. Prebendary. I have had second thoughts.
But, my dear Robarts, the thing's all settled. Settled quite definitely. I heard this morning.
Well, if an offer is made to me, Saadi, I must decline it.
Why?
Because if I accept, it will seem as if I have purchased the position.
Purchased it? How?
By giving you financial assistance. Those two bills of yours.
Oh, Robarts.
I couldn't bear it, Saadi, if the appointment was met with gossip and suspicion.
It won't.
But if word gets out concerning the bills...
My dear Robarts, my dear Prebendary, you have not purchased your new office. And no one can conceivably claim that you have. Let me confide in you. My brother-in-law, Lord Petty Bag, though he may be, has had little, well, nothing indeed, to do with the appointment.
Oh?
It transpires that it was the Duke of Omnium alone who recommended you to the Prime Minister.
Was it? In truth?
It was. I heard it from Fothergill, the Duke's agent. Robarts, if you continue, under these circumstances, to talk of giving up your new position, then I shall believe you to be insane. Until such time, I shall be pleased to regard you as the worthy prebendary of Barchester.
Ludovic, it's so lovely to see you.
Are you enjoying London, Mother?
Oh, I find it hard to do that. But it is expected of me, I'm afraid, to spend the season here.
And what has become of Miss Griselda Grantly this evening?
Nothing has become of her, Ludovic. She frequently retires at this hour. Unless we are out visiting, of course.
Ah, and talking of which, Mrs. Harold Smith is holding her party tomorrow. Have you been invited?
Griselda and I have indeed been invited. I imagine it will be a very large and a very extravagant affair.
I certainly hope so.
Quite extravagant enough to take care of 3 months' salary for the new Lord Petty Bag.
Are you and Miss Grantly going?
We are not.
Oh.
That is, it was not our intention to go. As you are aware, I do not have much time for Mr. Sowerby's sister. But if you are intending to be there, Ludovic...
Oh, I'll be there.
Then perhaps we shall change our minds.
Miss Grantly.
Yes?
Lord Dumbello, we met at my mother's, Lady Hartletop.
Yes.
Fine weather.
Cold.
Bitterly so. But you are well, I hope?
I think I'm well.
Excellent. I'm well too, uncommonly well. Perhaps we should dance.
Yes. Perhaps.
But I'm just as happy not to. Whichever you prefer. Yes, it's been deuced cold today.
And are you keeping well, Miss Dunstable?
I am always well, Mrs. Smith. It is my doctor who is prone to sickness.
Oh, now, when was the last time we met? We were at Gatherum Castle, I believe, and before then at Chaldicott's, my brother's place.
Oh, yes, forgive me. Oh, society seems to demand one a very nomadic life, I find. One goes so much from house to house, it is not easy to remember which house is which. But I do remember, Mrs. Smith, that at Chaldicott's, you were not Mrs. Smith at all, but Lady Papua of New Guinea.
Yes, indeed. Dreadful lecture my husband gave.
I gather he is in the government now.
He is, Miss Dunstable, which seems to have cured him of his South Sea obsession. He has been made Lord Pettibag, you know.
Lord Pettibag! Oh, splendid! And still you must be Lady Pettibag, must you not?
Yes.
Lady Papua. Lady Pettibag. Oh, heaven knows what title you'll have next. I do find politics somewhat confusing, though, don't you? When we were at Chaldicott, was it Gatherum Castle? You confided in me that your husband and others were plotting the Premier's downfall.
Ah,
the entire ministry, I believe, was soon to be dumped.
Yes, Miss Dunstable, there were thoughts, it's true, which moved in that direction. And perhaps, you see, the Prime Minister had caught wind of the disquiet, had decided at last to show some wisdom, seek new strength, infuse fresh blood into the ailing body of his government.
Yes, yes, of course. And all through a single appointment. How long will it be, do you think, before we notice the full effect of your husband's promotion?
Lord Dumbello and I were going to dance.
Yes, Miss Grantly.
But then we didn't.
Oh, well. Even being about to dance is an achievement for Lord Dumbello, I suppose. Do you like London?
Yes, I do.
Ah. I'm afraid you must have found things extremely tedious when you were with us at Framley.
No, no.
It was a great bore, I tell you, when you went away. There wasn't a soul around worth speaking to, not a soul. I was all for hanging myself in the park next morning. But then it rained.
You had your mother to talk to?
Yes, indeed. Dear mother.
And there was also Miss Robarts.
Oh, yes. Lucy Robarts.
You admire Miss Robarts, do you not?
Well, I like her. She's clever, I think. But I saw next to nothing of her after you left.
You've enjoyed yourself, I hope.
Oh, yes, Lady Lufton.
You bestowed a good many smiles upon my son during the evening.
Well, I danced with him 2 or 3 times.
You couldn't have danced with him too often for my liking, Griselda. It's very pleasant to see Ludovic dancing with my friends. Lord Dumbello, I think, didn't dance with you at all.
No.
I must tell you, my dear, he admires you very much. Ludovic, that is.
Oh, no. I'm sure he doesn't.
Well, I think you'll find that I am right. My dear, perhaps a mother is not the most impartial judge of her own son, but in my view, Ludovic is a young man of an excellent disposition. And if there should be anything between you and him...
There isn't, Lady Lufton.
But if there ever should be, my dear, I, for my part, would do nothing to oppose it.
Here he is. A fine beast, don't you think?
Oh, yes, he looks so. You have 2 horses already, don't you?
Yes, Lucy, yes I do, but I shan't be keeping him in all likelihood.
You bought him simply to sell him again?
Yes. Sowerby didn't need him, and the price was good. I don't think we shall come out the poorer for it, Fanny. Perhaps until I do sell him, I shall ride him to Barchester when I begin my new duties.
Ah, and how often will you be required there?
Once a week at the most, I think.
Being a prebendary doesn't seem very hard work.
No.
But it is a most dignified position, is it not?
Oh, yes, Lucy. And by canon law, the prebendary's wife and sister are most dignified, too.
Will you have a hat with curly boots beside and strings to hold them up?
I'm not certain. I shall have to consult the dean on that particular point.
You don't want to look like a common parson. We wouldn't wish you to be confused with Mr. Crawley of Hogglestock.
Well, I don't think there's any danger of that.
Talking of Mr. Crawley and Hogglestock, Lucy and I are taking the pony carriage over there this morning.
Oh, yes?
The baby has croup, poor dear, so we thought we would go and see how she is and how Mrs. Crawley's getting on.
And we shall take some things to give them, shall we not, Fanny?
We shall certainly take them, but if Mr. Crawley is there, we shall have a hard time handing them over.
Oh.
You should be warned, Lucy. The curate of Hogglestock is a strict, stern, not to say unpleasant man.
Mark.
And though he has 3 children and no money, he is not one to accept charity.
I was going to ask you, Mark, if you would like to come with us.
No, thank you, my dear. I wish you both good luck.
You know,
I have a suspicion that Lord Lufton will marry Miss Grantley.
Yes. Well, perhaps he will.
His mother would be happy with the match, I'm quite certain.
I dare say she might. Miss Grantley will have a large fortune, I believe.
Lucy?
Yes?
You needn't use the whip. Puck was going very nicely.
Oh, I beg Puck's pardon. When one is trusted with a whip, you see, one feels such a compulsion to use it.
It's, not just her fortune. Griselda is the sort of girl that Lady Lufton approves of. Quiet, I mean, and dignified. Not in need of much excitement, as well as being very beautiful, of course.
Beautiful?
Oh, yes, quite decidedly.
Well, she may be, and she may not. The question, I suppose, is whether Lord Lufton likes her.
I think he does, in a sort of way. Admittedly, I'm not sure he talks to her as much as he used to talk to you.
Oh, but that wasn't my fault. I'd have kept clear if I'd known he was poisoned. His mother didn't have him properly labelled. It's true, of course, that I ought never to have got to know Lord Lufton. It's very improper for a girl of my lowly position and very dangerous, as you've advised me. Since I do know him a little, I have to say that I would be surprised if he really wanted such a vapid thing to be his wife.
Lucy!
No! No, you raise the subject, Fanny, and I won't lie to you about it. I like Lord Lufton. I like him very much. And I dislike Miss Grantley. Dislike her very much. That's not the pony's fault. Oh, poor pup. I won't whip him anymore. I promise.
Come now, Mr. Crawley. Our guests must have chairs.
Yes, my dear, of course. Well, Mrs. Robarts, you would sit here.
Thank you, Mr. Crawley.
And, Miss Robarts?
I shall sit here, if I may move these books.
Oh, Mr. Crawley?
Oh, no, no, I can manage. Are these your books, Pop?
Some of them.
Selected passages from Greek and Latin authors.
That one's mine.
Well, so you're a scholar, then?
I don't know if I am or not. I'm learning about consecutive clauses at the moment.
Consecutive clauses? Oh, goodness.
It's all that I can give my children, you see, the little scholarship that's come my way. What have you got there, Bob?
Gingerbread nuts, Father.
Miss Robarts, we are very much obliged to you, but our children are not used to such things.
Oh, I'm afraid I'm a lady with a weak mind, Mr. Crawley, and I always carry a few tidbits with me when I go to visit children. So you must be indulgent and allow your little boy to accept the gift.
Very well, then. Bob, my child, give the bag to your mother.
Yes, Father.
Thank you, Bob.
And she will put the bag by?
Yes, yes. I will put the bag by.
And you and Grace shall each have one of these
gingerbread nuts.
From time to time.
Oh, dear. One small bag of gingerbread nuts creates such a difficulty, and Lucy still has a pot of guava jelly and a box of bonbons concealed in her muff. And how are we to dispose of the oranges and the chicken broth and the fresh pork and the eggs which are still in the pony carriage?
Well, Mrs. Robarts, Miss Robarts, you must forgive me. It's time I was seen to my parish.
Yes, yes, of course. And you must excuse me also. For a short while, little Jane here must be changed, I think.
You'll take your hat with you, Josiah, won't you?
Now then, Bob, Grace, do you like sugar plums?
Oh, yes.
Very much. That is, I'm sure we'll find that we do.
Well, let us see.
For I think I have a little box of them.
Oh, it's coming back. Oh, heavens.
I'm sorry, I've left my prayer book behind somewhere.
It's by the fireplace, Father.
So it is. Thank you.
I'll watch by the window and make sure he goes this time.
That is a very wise precaution, Bobby.
Well, he stopped to look at the pony carriage.
Oh, dear.
But now, he's moved off again. And now, he's gone!
With some alacrity, the illicit goods are put on display.
Roll up, roll up, come and buy.
And Lucy sells her wares for kisses, and in quick time, too. And even the contentious gingerbread nuts are brought out of hiding and compelled into this commercial scheme. And I go out to the pony carriage and start to bring in the various items and are met by Mrs. Crawley by the door.
Oh, Mrs. Robarts, you're very generous. Indeed you are.
I hope you don't mind.
Mind? I'm past minding, Mrs. Robarts.
For the children's sake, I have no shame about receiving gifts.
Will your husband be angry?
I'll manage him. His lot is very hard to bear, Mrs. Roberts. Very hard. One must remember that.
You must forgive me for coming to you at this time of sorrow.
Oh, 3 weeks! I was a cabinet minister's wife for just 3 weeks!
Yes, it's very unfortunate. But I don't see how there can be much cause for complaint. Harold knew there was a move to get rid of the ministry. Indeed, until 3 weeks ago, he was one of the chief conspirators.
Oh, such misery, such degradation. How could the government be voted against when poor Harold had only just joined it? Oh, it's not right, Nathaniel, it's not right. It's very doubtful, you know, whether the Queen will have a proper government at all.
Oh, she'll find a government from somewhere, I'm sure. Harriet, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to talk about this marriage business.
Marriage business?
My marriage. The idea first came from you.
Yes. Yes, it did.
And you did much to encourage me. Miss Dunstable, you said, will someday marry someone. So why should it not be Nathaniel Sowerby, and sooner rather than later?
Well, yes, dear brother, why not?
Harriet, if I am to marry Miss Dunstable, it must, in truth, be very soon. I missed my chance at Gatherum Castle because she left of a sudden. But now, I think, I must not delay any longer.
Then go to her. I won't pretend that it will be easy, though. And I would not advise that you kneel down at her feet and swear that you love her.
Oh, if I propose to her at all, I shall certainly do it without kneeling.
And without swearing that you love her.
Are you sure?
Nathaniel, I have got to know Miss Dunstable tolerably well over the past months. Better, I'm sure, than you know her. And I assure you, the only way you can be successful with her is to tell her the truth.
The truth, sister?
You must tell her that you are a gentleman of good blood and high station, but someone who is sadly out at elbows.
Oh, she knows that already.
Of course she does, but you must tell her it nonetheless. You must tell her also that you intend to remedy your situation by the simple expedient of marrying her.
Oh, I don't think I can tell her that.
Well, you will have no other chance of success, not with Miss Dunstable.
Listen, Harriet, I've a favour to ask.
Hmm? Miss Dunstable.
Yes, Mrs. Smith.
Miss Dunstable, I have come to propose to you.
Oh.
On my brother's behalf, I mean.
Ah, I see. Oh. Very well.
I hope you're not offended.
Laws, no. Nothing of that kind offends me now.
I suppose you're used to it.
I should say I am, Mrs. Smith, though generally I admit it is a fellow who makes the offer. Bye-bye. I'm so sorry I cannot call you Lady Pettibag any more. It seems to me that you were Lady Pettibag for less time than you were Lady Papua of New Guinea.
Yes. Anyway, regarding marriage, I'll try to be brief and straightforward too.
I'd be so grateful. One must avoid tedium.
And one must avoid pretense and falsehood too. You shall have the simple, plain truth and nothing but the truth.
So help me God. Yes, indeed. Magna est veritas, Mrs. Smith.
I'm sorry?
The Bishop of Barchester taught me that at Shaldicott. Oh, was it at Gatherum Castle?
Miss Dunstable.
He taught me some more as well, but unfortunately I've forgotten it.
Miss Dunstable?
Mrs. Smith.
My brother Nathaniel, as I'm sure you are aware, is not a very rich man.
As far as I am aware, he is a very poor man.
Though he does have a beautiful old property of his own, a property which has been in the family since long before the Norman Conquest, and which it would be very sad were it to go to ruin.
Well, my property is not that old. Oitmut Hall is a relatively new edifice, no older certainly than the commercial success of Ointment of Lebanon. But I should not be pleased for all that to see it decline.
Oh, heaven forbid that it should do so.
Amen. I take it that if you brought your brother and me together, if I became Mrs. Sowerby of Chaldicott and was no longer Miss Dunstable of Ointment Hall, you would think it would be a very good thing.
Oh, yes, undoubtedly.
For whom?
Well,
remember the bishop now and his nice little bit of Latin.
For Nathaniel, then. There. Is that truthful enough for you?
I think it is, so far. But did Mr. Sowerby have no other message to send? Did he have no word to say about love? Or anything of that sort?
Miss Dunstable,
I believe my brother has as sincere a regard for you as any man of his age ever has.
All is likely to have for any woman of my age. Yes, well, we are being truthful.
But heavens, what would you have me say? If I told you he was dying of love for you, then you'd say I was trying to cheat you.
Yes, of course I would. After all, it would be quite monstrous on my part to expect a man to love me, would it not?
Unsure.
I ought really to feel obliged to your brother for sparing me the usual compliments. Or rather, I should feel obliged to you. Since Mr. Sowerby's time is so occupied, it seems that he cannot attend to this small matter himself.
Upon my word, Miss Dunstable, you would test the patience of a saint.
Well, Mrs. Smith, I know precious few saints, I'm afraid. And I don't think I'm likely to add another to my acquaintance by marrying your brother.
He would do his very best to make you happy.
Perhaps he would. But I am very happy as I am. That is not to say, though, that I am at all averse to marrying. I'd marry tomorrow if I met a man I fancied, and if he didn't fancy money.
There are no such men, Miss Dunstable.
Well, then, I shan't marry.
So? What am I to tell my brother?
What are you to tell him? The truth, Mrs. Smith. And nothing but the truth.
My dear Fothergill. And how is business with the Duke of Omnium?
Oh, there's plenty of it, I find. And with the Duke, you know, it always has to be done at once.
And what does he want from me?
Well, Mr. Sowerby, I'm afraid he wants his money back.
Ah, now that's something that can't be done at once, as he's perfectly aware.
He wants it, nonetheless.
And he's getting it, but not at once. I pay him the interest regularly enough, do I not?
Pretty regularly, but sadly that's not the point. Mr. Sowerby, you know the Duke as well as I do. He has given you time to find what you owe him, and since you have failed to find it, well, he'll have to take your property.
But Fothergill, 180,000 pounds? I was never going to find that in a hurry.
There were some thoughts of an advantageous marriage?
No, it's all off.
Then you give the Duke no choice.
You mean I'm to be dispossessed?
Yes, if you choose to call it, sir.
I am to lose Chaldicotts?
You lost Chaldicotts when you mortgaged it.
I must say, Fothergill, your master is treating me uncommonly ill.
I don't see how. Thanks to him, you have your seat in Parliament.
I'm to pay him for that, am I?
You were given a large loan at a very reasonable rate.
Well, I thought it was reasonable, but I was paying him nonetheless. I tell you, I've been ill you.
I think not. For a great many years, you know, you've been eating your cake, and now, Mr. Sowerby, the cake is all gone. What right have you to complain about that?
And tell me, Mary, is young Frank Gresham well?
Oh, he is very well.
I think marriage suits the two of you.
It suits us perfectly, Miss Dunstable. Indeed it does. And I'm aware for that reason how much we are indebted to you.
Oh, I was never a matchmaker, my dear.
No, but you gave Frank courage, did you not? When so many obstacles were being put in our way, you urged him to be true to his love.
Well, if one cannot be true to one's love, what can one be true to?
Have you ever thought of getting married, Miss Dunstable?
Not a lot, Mary. I find that others tend to do such thinking for me.
Oh, before I forget, I saw my uncle last week. He sends his regards to you.
Dear Dr. Thorne, such a kind, wise man.
Yes. I wonder that he has never thought of marrying.
Dr. Thorne? Marry? I don't know. Too wise, perhaps, for that.
You are not well, dearest Lucy.
Oh, I have a headache, that's all.
But you had a headache yesterday and the day before. You never used to have these headaches.
No, it's because I'm growing stupid. Very stupid. Oh, dear, what an idiot I am. I think I should go back home. Back to Exeter.
But this is your home now, surely.
Oh, Fanny, don't pretend to be hurt. For you know that I love you, and you know, too, that I'd be so very happy to live in the parsonage for the rest of my life, if it were not for one thing.
Lucy.
And that one thing, of course, you also know.
Yes, I think I do.
Oh, you've known it for a while. Ever since that day we went to Hogglestock, and I took my feelings out on the poor pony.
Oh, my dearest.
Was I not right about putting labels in bottles of poison? Was I not? Oh, Fanny, I was so proud of my own strength. so determined not to be silly and sentimental. But a few soft words, and I was bowled over.
Perhaps he should not have spoken those soft words.
But they were not false words. They were words of kindness. We had met him in the lane, do you remember? And you went on to Framley Court, and he walked back with me to the parsonage and spoke about Papa. Just a few sweet, kind words. Of course, there is nothing wonderful about Lord Lufton. He is no hero. Perhaps it was his title that killed me. I've never spoken to a lord before.
Lucy, I don't know what to say. I can't tell whether you're joking or serious.
Well, I'm afraid I'm not very good at being either. And that's a fault of mine. Oh, Fanny, what a fool I've been. What a fool.
Dearest Lucy, it will all come right. Things always do when no one has acted wrongly.
Oh, but I have acted wrongly.
I don't see how. You didn't betray yourself to him.
No. No. I accomplished the pretense and the hypocrisy pretty well, I believe. I'll join a convent and starve myself and flog myself. And that way I'll get back my own mind, my own soul, my heart. Mind, soul, heart. I have lost them all. But why? Why? Was it his title, do you suppose? Or was it his legs?
Lucy!
Oh, perhaps you think I'm not in love at all.
I think you are. But it surprises me that you are, for I thought you would have been too prudent, too much...
Oh, my God, yes.
...to allow yourself to care for him.
Oh, but Fanny, it was not I who asked to go over to Framley Court. I never asked to become acquainted with Lady Lufton and her son. She invited me, dragged me out. And no sooner had she done that than she gave orders for me to be on my guard. Why is she to have it all her own way? Why am I to be sacrificed for her? Uncle?
Yes, Mary?
What do you think of Miss Dunstable?
What do I think of her? I would imagine I think the same of Miss Dunstable as you do.
Well, then, I think that she is honest.
Oh, yeah. Very honest, I should say.
Clever?
Certainly.
Affectionate, too.
Probably. Towards some folk, at least.
Womanly in her feelings.
Yes. Yes. No doubt. Mary, why are you so keen to dissect Miss Dunstable's character?
Well, Uncle, I believe that she is very fond of you.
Fond of me?
Well, it is possible to be fond of you, you know, despite your best efforts. And Miss Dunstable is so fond of you, Uncle, that although she has said nothing to me directly, I am of the opinion that it would make her happy if you and she were to get married.
Oh, Mary.
I am quite in earnest.
Perhaps you are. But you may also be mistaken. Utterly mistaken. Me get married to Miss Dunstable?
Yes, Uncle.
Good Lord. I think I should like another cup of tea, my dear. There is one.
One thing, at least, I did wrong, and it was this. I told Lord Lufton a lie. But strangely enough, it is the one and only thing that I do not regret.
If it was indeed a lie that you told him, Lucy, I cannot believe that you do not regret it.
Oh, you must believe me. Were Lord Lufton here and speaking to me as he did, I would repeat the falsehood.
But why should you lie to him? You told me there was nothing between you but ordinary conversation, kind words about your father.
Oh, that was at first. After that day, he said much more.
What did he say? Lucy?
I want to tell you. And I will, if I can be sure that I trust you.
I shall tell no one.
Not even Mark.
Not even Mark.
Well, then. Lord Lufton asked me to be his wife.
Lucy!
It's not credible, is it? Such a thing can't have happened. Not to me, at least.
Oh, Lucy!
But I don't think it was a dream. Here. Standing here on this very spot. This flower pattern here on the carpet. He begged me to be his wife. I wonder if you and Mark might let me cut this bit of carpet out and keep it.
What answer did you give him?
I told him that I did not love him.
That was my lie.
And why did you tell him that? Was it because of Lady Lufton?
In part, perhaps. But I might have dared to incur her wrath if I thought that marrying her son was right and good, that he would not have repented his impulsiveness. But he would have repented it. I know that. So do not think me conceited about my conquest. He would have repented before he had reached the garden gate. Was I wrong, Fanny? Ought I to have told him the truth? And what must I do now?
Do?
Well, yes, something must be done. If I were a man, I'd go to Switzerland, I suppose. Or as far as Hungary, if the case was very bad.
Lucy!
What is it that lovesick girls do these days? They don't still die of it, do they? What must I do? If I pray to God to give me help and guidance, how do I word my prayer? I do not know what wrong I have committed. I cannot see that the fault was mine, except that I knew no better, was a poor, simple fool. Oh, but something must be done. It must, and quickly too. For the pain, I think, is too great to be endured.
That was episode 2 of Framley Parsonage by Anthony Trollope, dramatised for radio in 3 episodes by Martin Wade. Mark was played by David Haig, Lady Lufton by Anna Massey, Fanny by Olivia Williams, Lucy by Abigail Doherty, and Josiah Crawley by Kenneth Cranham. Dr. Thorne was played by John Wood, Mary by Amanda Root, Mrs. Crawley by Gabrielle Lloyd, Lord Lufton by Christopher Scott, Miss Dunstable by Selina Cadell, Sowerby by John Carlyle, Mrs. Grantley by Julie Bond, Griselda by Alice Arnold, Mrs. Smith by Shirley Dixon, Fothergill by Sean Baker, and Lord Dumbello by Ewan Meredith. Framley Parsonage was directed by Cherry Cookson.